Du hörst den Potenzialforscher-Podcast, Episode Nummer 26. In dieser Folge spreche ich mit der inspirierenden Rilla Riesler darüber, wie man in einem fremden Land sein Glück findet, wie sie ihre innere Kritikerin zum Relaxen auf einen Thron schickt und wie wichtig es ist, wenn wir unsere Gefühle teilen. Und weil das Interview auf Englisch ist, in this episode I talk with the inspiring Rilla Riesler about how to find happiness in another country, how she handles her inner critic, and how important it is to share our stories and feelings. Willkommen beim Potenzialforscher-Podcast für mehr Freude, Erfüllung und Sinn im Leben. Ich bin dein Potenzialforscher-Coach Christina Schacka. Hallo liebe Potenzialforscherinnen und Potenzialforscher. Ich mag es ja, wenn sich Menschen auf der ganzen Welt miteinander verbinden. Umso mehr freue ich mich, dass wir heute den ersten Potenzialforscher-Podcast auf Englisch halten. Zu Gast habe ich die wunderbare Rilla Riesler. Rilla ist gebürtige Amerikanerin, ist teils in Paraguay aufgewachsen und lebt seit 2008 in der Schweiz. Aufgrund ihrer eigenen Erfahrung als Auswanderin veranstaltet sie in Basel Workshops für Expats. Mit zwei Kolleginnen hat sie 2018 das Buch «The Trailing Spouse Reimagined» veröffentlicht. Die wichtigste Zutat, sein Glück in der Welt zu finden, ist es für Rilla, sich nicht zu sehr auf Ergebnisse und Erwartungen zu versteifen, sondern offen zu bleiben und zu sehen, was auf einen zukommt. Was für eine wunderbare Haltung! Rilla, you had an incredible journey in your life. Born in the States, you were raised a few years in Paraguay, then back to the USA. Later, you lived with your husband again in Latin America. Since more than 10 years now, you live in Basel. What were your challenges adjusting to the different cultures and places?
It depends on which time I moved. When we moved here to Basel, I had already had the experience of living abroad with my husband, or he wasn't my husband at the time, and we got married in the middle of our time in Paraguay. And what I knew was that when I moved to Paraguay, I thought, I've got family there, I speak the language, I know the culture, I've lived there before, it's going to be easy. It wasn't. Even with all of that there, there was still an adjustment. And what happened to us was when I was there about 6 months, I was kind of going crazy.
Okay.
And then I got used to it and was really quite happy. My husband was probably still crazy. So he said, let's move and talk to his company about we don't want to stay, you know, so we can move somewhere. And then by the time we were leaving at almost a year, both of us were ready to stay. You know, by then we had adjusted a bit to the culture, to how things were done differently, to the slower pace. And so when I moved to Basel, I said, okay, no life decisions for the first year.
Okay.
Maybe longer.
Makes sense.
Right? Because I'm going to give myself time. Mm. And I'm going to try to be a little more easy with myself and just give myself space. So it did get easier when I came to Basel. That doesn't mean that I didn't have days that were crazy and difficult and that my head would hurt, both from trying to understand German, trying to study it, and then also just not feeling like I knew how to do things in the right way here, right? I mean, it's a little bit like your first day of a job where everyone has been working there for a long time and they all know the systems and they know where things are. And I just felt so out of place for a while. Mm. But I knew that would happen, so.
Mm. Yeah. And how did you manage to integrate?
I think I got out and did a little bit of volunteering. And then I started meeting people to have slightly deeper conversations. When I went out and met people in the beginning, I had a couple of women who sort of adopted me and really helped me find my way, who had moved from one from the UK and one from Australia. Then I wanted to just talk a little bit more deeply with people because I thought, I have done this before and I have a great attitude. I wanted to move here, maybe even more than my husband, and it was his job that got us here. And still I have hard days. And so I bet I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. So kind of like you were saying when we started talking before the interview, after a while I was ready to do something and I wasn't sure what. So I began to gather people together to share their stories about what it feels like to live abroad, yeah. right? And that then turned into a class, which mm-hmm. I called Expat Experience. Mm-hmm. I recognized that sharing stories was good, but having a little structure would help. And I had a background in personal development and training. Yes. So that worked. And then, yeah, that's kind of morphed now. And I'm still doing something like that. And now it's called Mindfulness for Life Abroad. The thing is, what I knew I was craving was that more deep conversation. I find that it's really helpful when I'm going through a hard time to know that I'm not the only one, mm-hmm. that I'm not crazy, mm-hmm. and to laugh at myself. And that's easier to do with some other people around.
Oh, that's true. That's yeah. true. So you're still doing these classes?
I do. I yeah. do them periodically. I don't have them running all the time, but yeah. when I have interest, then I run them. And my favorite way to do them is over the course of 4 weeks, because that way we have a chance to share our stories, learn a little bit about mindfulness yeah. and awareness, go out and practice, have some funny things happen and come back. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times we create a really safe space, and sometimes there are tears, and a lot of times there's a lot of laughter,
wow,
you know?
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah. yeah. So it's good to go through it together. And I think that sometimes we tend to think that I'm the only one having a hard time, because mm-hmm. I look at everybody else and it looks like they're doing great.
Mm. They seem so happy.
They seem happy. They're learning German, I'm sure, much faster than me. They've already gotten comfortable either with their new job or not job, whatever they chose. I must be the only one yeah. who's struggling. But of course, it's not true.
Not true.
Not true.
Yeah. And sharing is so so important.
Yeah, it just helps so much mm-hmm. to be real and know that other people are going through it. It just takes the edge off, right? I find that when I stop pressuring myself, that I call it shoulding on myself, like I should do this, I should do that, I should be better, faster, greater, mm-hmm. it doesn't work.
No.
And when I can release that pressure, I'm actually then operating from a more inspired place. Thanks. And the work, whatever comes of it, whatever grows from that, I think grows more easily and faster. So it's kind of opposite of what maybe our Western culture says, work hard, push,
more,
always squeeze in something else, yeah. right? And what I find is when I'm with other people going through a similar situation and we can share that, then we release that pressure and we laugh mm-hmm. and we tell funny stories about the time, for example, that I was so tired and so off and I thought I saw someone who was a friend of mine from across the street. I probably didn't have my glasses on. She did have her hair pulled back like my friend, but I went running up to her and gave her 3 kisses, right? And then realized she was my mechanic's daughter. She was
so
not
funny.
A friend, you know? She was, and there we are in the street, and I am just red as can be and thinking, oh, you know, but I survived.
No, it's so funny. And it's... And it's heartwarming.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she must have been shocked, but, you know, at least I was friendly, right?
Yeah, very friendly.
We Americans are known for being very friendly. Well, I didn't mean to be that friendly, but there you go.
I like that idea of the place where you're inspired.
Yeah.
That's a great sentence.
Yeah, it's something that I work at all the time in my own mindfulness practice, right? And that is to not do something from a, oh, I have to, I should get this done place, mm-hmm. but try to do it when I am really inspired. And there's a balance, because of course there's certain jobs I really never want to do, right? Paperwork yeah. and details and all of that. But I do find that if I will give myself a little space, most often I'll get it done mm-hmm. from a happier place. Mm-hmm. It's not that I'm going to be as lazy as my head sometimes tells me. Oh, you know, you're just being lazy. That critic, the inner critic comes out. And
Was that easy for you to find that place?
No, it's been a long time practice.
Okay.
I would say in the 10 years that I've been here, I've practiced it a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I gave myself permission to really study what I wanted to study. And I feel like one of the benefits of technology today mm-hmm. is that you can find a lot. It takes a little bit of sorting, but the more that I practice trusting my intuition on who to listen to, what speaks to me, and then just keep practicing from there, and then sharing it with others who are interested, then that's working pretty well. I've also learned that I have days that I feel great, inspired. I do a lot of good work, and it's amazing sometimes what I can get done. And then I have other days that I'm just not there. And I am giving myself permission to just lay low on those days, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I also, if those are the days that sometimes my inner critic becomes very loud, and she says, you're being lazy, you should be doing this, you know you need to work on your website, you know you need... right? And I am telling her, thank you, I appreciate it, and I'm going to ignore you today, or I'm, as a workshop I went to said, don't ignore her. Put her on a nice throne, put her feet up, tell her to get a good book and relax, you know, and talk to me tomorrow.
Oh, that's a great picture.
Because tomorrow I'll probably be ready to do all those things. And indeed, that's, overall, that's what's working. Mm-hmm. I think that's how the book got written. Mm-hmm. We didn't push ourselves a lot. Now, when it came to the end and there was a deadline because of course, publishing and all that, sure. But we just kept working on it. Mm-hmm. We just kept working on it without knowing if it would ever be published. Yeah. But we knew that the project had a life of its own.
What would you recommend to somebody who is not doing it so easily to get to this place of inspiration? Or just letting go, or just letting things happen.
Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's really good to come into community with other people in whatever way you can, mm-hmm. who are perhaps being a little bit easier with themselves. Mm-hmm. What I know is that if I'm feeling, I've just started to notice, if I'm feeling very judgmental of others, mm-hmm. then I know I'm also being judgmental of myself, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's the case for many people. If they're being really hard on themselves, a lot of times they're having trouble getting along with others, things aren't going well, I don't know, then it's just to maybe try and be with some people who are taking life a little bit more lightly. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not to not appreciate, it is to really appreciate the moment, not take everything quite so seriously. Yeah. Because I think what happens when we take things seriously is we actually strangle off the natural flow of the universe. I think that when we can relax a little bit and say, some days are great, some days I don't feel so great, but I know that things are still growing, then things start to come more easily. I see it when I meet people who are new to Basel, yeah. new to Switzerland, mm-hmm. and are so worried about getting a job right away. And what tends to happen, I think, is that they become very tunnel visioned, very closed in their focus, and almost desperate. Mm-hmm. And what's unfortunate is right beyond the tunnel, they're looking down on the, just outside of that tunnel, probably lies a really good opportunity for them.
So they miss them.
So they miss it, mm-hmm. because they're so hyper-focused. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if that always worked, I would say go for it. But in my experience and seeing many people, it's not the most effective way to get a job.
No.
And or to do anything, whatever it is you want to do, to start your own business, to be that intense about it. And for me, what it's been is planting a lot of seeds, and then some of them grew and some of them didn't. And it's not a direct process, uh-huh. but... the more patient I am with myself, then I feel like the easier it's gotten and the more that comes in. Mm-hmm. I think when people are hyper-focused, they close themselves off and almost can come across as desperate. And what I remind people is when they used to be, if they're in the dating world now or if they used to be, you know, no one wants to be around someone who is desperate, right?
Right.
And the same thing when you're going on that job interview. I think you should interview the company as much as they're interviewing you, yeah? Mm. And you don't want to contort yourself to do just anything to get a job.
Right.
You want to really think about it and then...
Finding the right thing.
Finding the right thing. And I understand some people really want to work, and that's okay. But still, a little bit of, let's really look at the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to get people to do if they come to mindfulness class somewhere before they're off on that path of being hyper-focused on getting a job, or even if they are on that path, take a look at the bigger picture.
You already mentioned it, that you launched a book called The Trailing Spouse Reimagined in 2018 with two other women. Mm-hmm. Would you tell us more about that book and the idea behind it?
Yeah, so I was teaching the class that is now Mindfulness for Life Abroad, and we had a really interesting group of people. It's always interesting, but this one was particularly mixed with men and women, people from all over the world. Some were trailing partners, some were employees who, it was during the day, so they either had unusual work schedules or had recently been laid off. So we had just an interesting group. And I knew these two women, Francesca and Adriana, before the course. Adriana said, I'm coming. Francesca said, I will come to one class to be nice, but I have no intention of staying.
Okay.
She came to the first class and she changed her mind.
She stayed.
She stayed. She stayed and just really enjoyed the class. And at the end, Adriana and I went out for coffee a few days after the class was over. And we were just marveling at how powerful the stories were and how much people had shared from their hearts and how valuable that was for us. And so we said, these stories need to be shared. And I looked at her and I said, I think we should write a book. And she said, well, and she had writing background. And I had always known somewhere in my head, in my heart, I'm going to write a book. I don't know what it's going to be about. And so we said, you know, let's just collect the stories and see what happens. If it's a blog, if it's just something we give to our friends and family, no worries, but let's
just started.
So we started, and she said, I think we should invite Francesca to be a part of the process. So I contacted Francesca, and she was quite sure she was going to be a project manager and have nothing to do with writing, but that's not what happened at all. And we all ended up, you know, interviewing people and then weaving their stories into essays combined with our own stories. It took us a long time to figure out how to write it, because in the beginning, it was like, do we write about the beginning phase of life abroad and then the middle and then after you've been here a while? But the fact is, no one goes through it in the same way, and no one has the same timing, right? Some people adjust more quickly, others take a long time, and personally, I believe that it's a constant adjustment. Mm-hmm. It's not maybe ever done. Mm-hmm. I mean, my kids are now Swiss citizens and we're going to be eligible too and thinking about getting our citizenship. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that I won't still be a foreigner and sometimes feel out of place. Yeah. And that's really become okay with me on most days. So anyway, we started collecting the stories. We realized that if we just wrote about how we related to the people that we had interviewed, that that seemed to be the best way to tell the stories. And that's what we did. So then we came up with the chapters and then at the end a little bit more about us.
Yeah, it's great written as a compliment. It's
thank you.
I can recommend the book very much. What are the issues of the spouses? The most common, maybe, or the biggest struggle.
Right. So it varies so much. But for me, the one that I have seen consistently is identity. Mm. Yeah. So if I decide to move with my partner, I like to say with rather than for, because I'm not doing it for him. I wouldn't do it unless I wanted to. Okay. But still, I give up so many things, my role, perhaps my career if I had one. If I didn't have a career, I probably had an important role in my family, my job, my community, if it wasn't even my lifetime career. I give all that up and move, and I think it's going to be great to just take a break. And it is great for a while. But then what happens is almost everybody, I believe, has something to give. Mm. They have value, gifts to be shared, and it's important for them to be shared and appreciated. So taking a break isn't enough over the long term, right? And we all want to be seen. We want to be appreciated for who we are, not for just being a partner or a spouse.
No, the gift wants to be shared.
Yes, exactly. And so now how do I do that in this new community where perhaps I don't understand the culture, the way things are done, perhaps I don't speak the language, perhaps what I did before doesn't really translate here, it may or may not work. And my partner, meanwhile, pretty much arrived and on Monday morning went off to a job, just like she or he did before.
Yeah, the rhythm is there.
The rhythm is there, the structure is there for them.
Yeah.
And I'm left feeling a bit, we call it floundering, right? Like a fish that's just sort of blah, 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 I don't know where I'm going. And so that to me is often the biggest issue. And then it depends on it. Are people here on an international assignment for a couple of years? And then the question is, how much do I invest in recreating myself here if we're just going to pick up and move again, right?
Maybe in 1 or 2 years.
Exactly. Yeah. And even when we came, we thought we were going to be here for about 5 years. Pretty much right before we left the States, there was a big change. And we arrived then not knowing if my husband would have a job at the end of the first year.
Oh my God.
So then we had to decide, are we going to put our kids in local school like we wanted to, like we thought, or international school in case we have to leave again? And we decided to behave as if we were going to be here for at least 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it, in the long run, it worked out because 10 years and here we are.
Yeah, more than 10 years.
Yeah, wow. right.
Was there a person or maybe more several person who inspired you on your way?
Well, you know who I really think of are my parents. Mm-hmm. So my father was with the Foreign Service in the United States, and he worked for both the Voice of America and then worked for the Diplomatic Corps, working as public relations in the embassies. Mm-hmm. Most of that happened before I was born. But when I was very young, as you mentioned, we lived abroad. We lived in Paraguay until I was about 4 years old, from the ages of 1 to 4. And that already opened up my world. And he always had such an attitude of wanting to move into a culture and really get to know the people and really immerse himself.
Okay.
So he'd never wanted to be part of the bubble, right, of foreigners. And so he inspired me. And then my mother inspired me because she was just such an amazing diplomat's wife, entertaining presidents and putting all kinds of people together in a room who maybe did or didn't get along, all that she had to do in addition to having 3 young daughters to pick up and move every 2 to 3 years.
Wow.
And she did it with such grace and always created a home for them. And then when I came along, I was number 4. Number 5 was already gone. We were 5 girls in our family. And so they just really made such an effort to get to know people and to see everyone as just another human being that I really want to know. And I think that inspired me a lot and kept me going and kept me wanting to explore wherever it is that I'm living.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the first people I think of.
That's wonderful. Do you have a special passion or a purpose in life you follow? I mean, you do a lot of different things with the workshops and the book, and also you're a yoga teacher as well. Is there a common purpose? Or?
Well, sometimes I think I'm put on the planet just to put people together.
Oh, that's great.
You know, I mean, I think when I look at things, I often will meet someone and say, oh, do you know this person? Because I think they're doing this. And
so you're a little bit like your mother.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. She was very good at that. She was very good at putting people to sit next to the right person and getting them. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think otherwise my goal is to, you know, my goal is to shed my armor and my facade as much as I can. Of course, I still put it up sometimes, but my goal is to shed it and to operate from my heart as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's what I look for in other people. Mm-hmm. And I want to give them a space where they feel safe to do the same. Aww. Right? And I think whether I'm teaching yoga and saying, you can do yoga, you don't have to do it the way I'm doing it. You need to listen to yourself and your own body. I'm here to guide you, but, you know, not to tell you must do it a certain way. Or if I'm in the mindfulness classes where people can really feel that they can be safe to just be themselves with no need to have any, to look a certain way or have any set of accomplishments, to know that they're valued just for being on the planet, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The rest is extra and lovely and nice, but not necessary. Yeah. So that's the other goal that I see that I think about as I'm working with people day to day, whether it's through yoga, mindfulness, or some of the other classes that I do.
That's a great mission.
Yeah, it is. It's good. And it requires me to, you know, think about it all the time. That's a little bit of the awareness that I like to practice myself and bring to people. So mindfulness, sometimes people think of as meditation and, you know, just, but for me, I think of it more as an everyday, day-to-day practice. I feel like if I want to be mindful and present for the big things in my life, I need to start practicing on the little things.
That's much harder to do.
So when I notice that the small things, like I lose something and I get so upset and so it can just ruin my day, or I say it doesn't ruin my day. I ruin my day. Yeah. That's me doing that. Over losing something that really isn't so valuable in the big scheme of things, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, isn't that interesting? What's happening in here? Woo! And then I really try and think about it, and is it worth it? And, you know, I lost my sister to cancer a few years ago.
I'm sorry about that.
Thank you. And I think that going through that has really helped me value my days differently. Mm-hmm. I no longer look at my to-do list as my how was my day, right? Mm-hmm. I want to look at how was my experience, you know? Because we don't know how many more days we have left. And the accomplishments and all that are nice, but I think it's more about, you know, am I living from my, hopefully from my higher self? Am I living deeply? Am I in a place to really notice what's here? Mm-hmm. And to really appreciate. And when I can say yes to that for a day, then I know, for me, that's a successful day.
Wow.
And some days, that means really, like even today, I'm a little tired. To be honest, I feel like I'm a little bit less coherent in this interview than I might usually be. But I also allow myself to have days like this because I recognize I'm not going to be 100% and on every day.
It's not possible.
I get to be human.
Yeah.
And so
and that's what we like about others when they are human, but we always want to be different than human. That's really strange.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Right? I mean, really, we think that being perfect is what will attract others to us, but it's the opposite. Yeah. Right? It's when we're real that people say, oh, I could talk to her.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, even like when I met you, you know, going to some of these different events and everything, it's just when I meet someone that I can just kind of go, yeah, I can tell. You know, it's what works.
Great. Last question. What is one of your special strengths? Or just one of yours?
Yeah.
Maybe two?
Yeah, I think my enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. I don't think I recognized it as a young person. I think I got hired for a couple of jobs, and they, you know, my bosses, who was a friend, later told me, Rilla, do you not recognize how excited you are about things and how that rubs off on people?
You didn't know that?
I did not know that. I certainly never thought it was something that was worth anything, you know?
Oh, okay.
You know, as a young woman working in the corporate world, I thought what was more important is you know, selling more and having having higher numbers and all that stuff. So I began to say, oh, well, that's odd that someone would hire me for a professional job because I'm excited about things.
It's great.
But now I recognize that my enthusiasm, when I can let go of all my fears of how am I going to look and what are they going to think and will I look foolish, that then that childlike enthusiasm can really come out, and it is contagious. Yeah. And that it is a good thing. And so I see that, that it's something that's valuable.
Yeah, and you take other people with you.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And that's something that I also recognize, you know, when I think of why people hire someone, I heard this years ago, but I don't think I understood it. But now I do. It's how they make you feel, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. If I feel like I'm hiring someone and I feel that I feel safe with her around and I feel like things are going to work and I can trust and I can relax, that's who I want on my team. So now I recognize why people would want me on their team. Before I didn't get it, you know? But I think that enthusiasm goes a long way and I'm really thankful for it as a gift. And so now I try and foster it as great. Opposed to tamping it down, which I used to think I needed to.
Oh, yeah, that's great. It's a great gift.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much, Rilla. It was a really, really interesting interview with you, and thanks for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Wenn du mehr über die Arbeit von Rilla erfahren möchtest, findest du alle Angaben auch zum Buch in den Shownotes. Wenn dir diese Folge gefallen hat, empfehle doch den Potenzialforscher-Podcast weiter. Gegenseitig können wir unsere Geschichten teilen, uns inspirieren und unterstützen. Ich danke dir. Und denk daran, wenn wir unser Potenzial in die Welt tragen, dann ist es Magie. Etwas in uns leuchtet besonders hell.